All right. If you have your New Testaments, we'll be going, well, that's not what, we're going to be talking about the three philosophies of life. The three philosophies of life, and what we're going to find is that of Luke chapter 10, in which we remember this parable, and we'll break it down here as we read through the verses, but the parable of the Good Samaritan, we remember. And if you notice there that this parable comes along after a certain man who is noted to be a lawyer comes to Jesus and has a question for him. And if you remember there, if you back up to verse 25 as we read along here of the text, Luke chapter 10, that behold, a certain lawyer stood up and tested him, saying, "Teacher, what shall I do to inherit eternal life?" He said to him, what is written in the law? What is your reading of it? So he answered and says, "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your strength, and with all your mind, and your neighbor as yourself." And he said to him, "You have answered rightly. Do this, and you will live." And notice he goes into the parable in verse 29. But he, wanting to justify himself, said to Jesus, "And who is my neighbor?" Then Jesus answered and said, "A certain man went down from Jerusalem to Jericho and fell among thieves, who stripped him of his clothing, wounded him, departed, leaving him half dead. Now by chance a certain priest came down that road, and when he saw him, he passed by on the other side. Likewise a Levite, when he arrived at the place, came and looked and passed by on the other side. But a certain Samaritan, as he journeyed, came where he was, and when he saw him, he had compassion. So he went to him and bandaged his wounds, pouring on oil and wine. And he set him on his own animal, brought him to an inn, and took care of him. On the next day, verse 35, when he departed, he took out 2 denarii, gave them to the innkeeper, and said to him, 'Take care of him, and whatever more you spend, when I come again, I will repay you.' So which of these three do you think was neighbor to him who fell among the thieves?" And he said, "He who showed mercy on him." Then Jesus said to him, "Go and do likewise." Now this is always an intriguing parable of the sort because of the very instance of what Jesus does here and what he gets this lawyer to think about and us as well this evening. We have here that the lawyer, trying to test Jesus, asked him how to gain eternal life. Okay? That was his question. How do I gain eternal life? And so Jesus, doing what he so desired, this was his plan to begin with, he turned the question around and he asked for his opinion first. Okay? The response was to love God and to love his neighbor, to which Jesus said, "I agree with him." He says, "I agree that you answered rightly." But the lawyer really didn't have a problem with loving God, but obviously he felt uncomfortable with his past action in loving his neighbor, that there was something there in which to justify himself, is what it says, right? He tried to narrow the definition of neighbor by asking Jesus to actually define neighbor. The parable of the Good Samaritan was Jesus' answer to the lawyer here. Notice that three different philosophies of life towards those around us is actually given in this parable. I don't know if you ever looked at it that way, but this is what we're going to think about this evening. And in the thought of three philosophies that are presented here, through each one of these in the parable that's mentioned, the first one I would submit to you, the first philosophy of life, I'm sure we can, like I said, we can look on the news and we don't have to go too far to find that out, but the robbers, their philosophy is what is thine is mine. How true that is. Because if you think about it, a robber practices the philosophy might makes right. That's the philosophy there. And as we talk about, it's evidenced in our society. Carjackings, we think about armed robberies. What they're saying is, what is yours is mine. If I can take it from you,
It's mine.
You know, and we think about it in the worldly standpoint as we look around, but the Scriptures teach of such. One of those places is that of 2 Timothy chapter 3 and verse 3. Unloving, unforgiving, slanderers, without self-control. Uses the word brutal. Okay? Despisers of what? Good. It's the very opposite of the playing field. It's a characteristic of the wicked is brutality. We see that everywhere. And matter of fact, Proverbs chapter 4 and that of verses 14 through 17 talks about this very philosophy of what is thine is mine. Notice there in verse 14 of Proverbs chapter 4, do not enter the path of the wicked, he says, and do not walk in the way of evil. Avoid it. Do not travel on it. Turn away from it and pass on. For they do not sleep unless they have done what? Evil. Unless they have done evil, they don't sleep. That's a weird way of looking at it, isn't it? Have you ever lost sleep because you just haven't done evil to someone lately? And their sleep is taken away unless they make someone fall. Think about that. For they eat the bread of wickedness and drink the wine of violence. Wow, that's just amazing what the proverb writer tells us. We might know people like that. That's a very sad situation that violence has become their nature. And this philosophy. You know, and that's one thing that the king of old in 2 Kings chapter 18 and verse 20 had problems with. He didn't understand exactly why. 2 Kings chapter 18 and verse 20. You find that there was a question that arose in verse 20. Look at verses 19 and 20 of 2 Kings chapter 18. Many people prided themselves in their great armies and what kind of violence that they could promote and what they could do to overtake nation after nation and such and so forth. And that's what they relied upon. Okay, we remember that, physical things that would, you know, make them who they were, and rather than relying upon God and His kindness and love. Well, verse 19, then Rabshakeh said to them, say now to Hezekiah, thus says the great king, the king of Assyria, what confidence is this in which you trust? You speak of having plans and power for war, but they are mere words. In whom do you trust, okay, that you rebel against me? That was the question. You know, we think about someone who is a great king and great power, the king of Assyria here. And here it is that Rabshakeh questioned the object of Hezekiah's trust. His trust, his reputation for trusting in God was already widely known in verse 5 of chapter 18. And trusting became actually the focal point of the Assyrians' psychological warfare. They want to know, who is it that you trust in that you can boast? Because Sennacherib actually was boasting against the Lord in that same section there. And as you find there, is that trust and strength and plans are empty words. Are empty words. We think about those people who fell because they were just all about might makes right. How often did those armies begin to fail and falter and become utterly destroyed because they were going against what? God, who was the absolute, who was the right, who was the truth. The Israelites did that same thing. They started having that concept of might makes right. And they fail constantly because God let them know that philosophy, that outlook on life was wrong. They were trusting in their own strength, in their own plans, and it was empty. It was vain. It was futile. And if we want to talk about vanity of vanities, all is vanity and vexation of spirit, all we got to do is go to the Ecclesiastes writer, don't we? In Ecclesiastes. He talks about that. And so even then, it doesn't stop there when we start thinking about power. We think about trusting in ourselves and our own plans and such as that. Looking out for me, myself, and I. But even that, you find even in the days of old that money actually came before their fellow man. Do we see that happening today where money comes before our fellow man? A lot of decisions that's made in the United States aims right there. Money. And that's riches. The riches can actually be that snare. Well, that was many times the downfall of the nation of Israel. But if you notice there in 1 Timothy chapter 6 and verses 6 through 10, we speak about that of error and greed that we talked about a little bit even in our Bible class just about a week ago. In verse 6 of 1 Timothy chapter 6, he says, "Now godliness with contentment is great gain, for we brought nothing into this world, and it is certain we can carry nothing out. And having food and clothing, with these we shall be content. But those who desire to be rich fall into temptation and a snare, and the many foolish and harmful lusts which drown men in destruction and perdition. For the love of money is a root of all kinds of evil, for which some have strayed from the faith in their greediness and pierced themselves through with many sorrows." The riches have become the snare. The believer has been caused to stray from the faith, blinded by greed and materialism to such a degree that they break away from their faith. That's what he's talking about. And what he says, that many sorrows, where this life that's focused on material things, and many times if it's focused on material things, it's focused on what? Once again, that me, myself, and I. About what I can get versus what I can give. And it produces only pain and sorrow. Consider that. And then, of course, when we think about riches and such as that, well, it doesn't take us we don't have to go very far. I thought they had that verse posted up there, but I don't. But Luke chapter 12. In Luke chapter 12, you find yet another instance where Jesus is talking about physical riches and about focus, in which we have the parable that's mentioned there in Luke chapter 12, verses 16 through 21, just for a moment. Notice there. About where his aim was, what his focus was. It says in verse 16 of Luke chapter 12, "Then he spoke a parable to them, saying, The ground of a certain rich man yielded plentifully. And he thought within himself, saying..." Well, that's the first mistake. See? He thought within himself, right? So he says, "What shall I do, since I have no room to store my crops?" So he said, "I will do this. I will pull down my barns and build greater, and there I will store all my crops and my goods, and I will say to my soul, Soul, you have many goods laid up for many years. Take your ease, eat, drink, and be merry." But God said to him, "Fool, this night your soul will be required of you. Then whose will those things be which you have provided?" So is he who lays up treasure for what? Himself. And is not rich toward God. See, there's a key there. Physical riches cannot save. We know this. But many have put their own well-being first. Many have had that concept, the end justifies the means. Needed revenue does not justify stealing. Nor does it justify legalized drug use, you know. But the death of Jesus on the cross brought salvation to mankind. But even so, it did not justify the Jews' actions, did it? It didn't justify the way that they acted. In Acts chapter 2, you notice there in verses 22 and verse 23, what is mentioned there. Here's their actions that Peter says to them in the sermon here of Acts 2, verse 22 and 23. "Men of Israel, hear these words. Jesus Nazareth, a man attested by God to you by miracles, wonders, and signs, which God did through him in your midst, as you yourselves also know, him being delivered by the determined purpose and foreknowledge of God, you have taken by what kind of hands? Lawless hands have crucified and put to death. Now, what kind of mindset do you think that they had? Might makes what? Right. They took them by what? Lawless hands. Because did they have their own agenda on how things were going to turn out? Well, absolutely they did. And many people today have that same thought. What is thine is mine. And it's focused on that philosophy inwardly, completely inwardly, about what I can get versus what I can give. And you see where we're going with the lesson. So, consider that, the first philosophy of life, the robbers. Okay, they took this man and they beat him. And they took what he had for themselves. Hopefully we don't fall in that category, physically or spiritually. The second philosophy of life is the priest and the Levite. We're gonna put them together, okay? What is mine is mine. Okay? Now you kind of see what's being said there. Here's the philosophy of every man for himself. They say a dog eat dog world, you know, things like that. A common attitude of the religious class. This is really hurtful, okay, for religious people to hear. You know, when you think about Jesus talking to those scribes and those Pharisees, man, that was tough. Because many times we talk about that instance where he says, you are beautiful on the outside, but inwardly you're full of dead men's bones. Man, that was rough. That was real rough. Because actually what they have found out, that from 2 Timothy 3 and verse 2, these people are lovers of themselves. Okay? For men will be lovers of themselves, lovers of money. Well, we just talked about that one, didn't we? Boasters, proud, blasphemers, disobedient to parents, unthankful, unholy. The list goes on. You see, where that falls in, the priest and the Levite fit this category. They fit this philosophy. So, what was the problem with them? They were too busy in their own duties to get involved. Why, I could speak for centuries on that one, about not getting involved. Now, I told y'all about that time I was doing last year, was having all these burglaries and things, and so I took it upon myself that I was going to dress in the cold, you know, and just wear blue jeans, you know, and a hoodie, and have the hoodie up and everything. And I was going to creep around checking doors and everything, walking through people's neighborhoods, jerking on business doors and things like that. You ought to see the people's faces when they pass by. Oh no, that guy's going to break in. And they leave. Do you know that not one single person called in on me to call the police? What kind of neighborhoods do we have? Because nobody wants to get involved. Man, if it was my house, somebody call, at least call me. Let me know something's going on. And then everybody's like, oh no, did you hear what happened? Somebody broke in. I saw somebody like that the other day. You know, you think about that. Too busy on what I've got going on in my life to worry about somebody else's property or somebody else's what's going on with them. That's a physical standpoint, obviously. But we go to the spiritual. They didn't cause the man's unfortunate circumstances, did they? Well, let's justify this, okay? It's unfortunate that it happened to him. Really can't help that, you know? Pitiful. They felt no obligation or responsibility for the man's welfare. Nothing. I would even use the word inkling. They didn't have the inkling. Consider that, in other words, they neglected an opportunity to do good. Isn't that what that is? That's really the gist of it, isn't it? Well, with that in mind, James 4 and verse 17. Here you have it actually being stated that to him to knoweth to do good and doeth not, it is to him what? Oh, there's that three-letter word, sin, isn't it? Not doing the good we know about is a sin. Well, that hits there. Well, if you go on from that of James chapter 4 and back up two chapters and look at James chapter 2, and I should have it up here. There it is, verses 13 through 16. James 2, verses 13 through 16. All right. For judgment is without mercy to the one who has shown no mercy. Okay? Mercy triumphs over judgment. What does it profit, my brother, if someone says he has faith but does not have works? Can faith save him? If a brother or sister is naked and destitute of daily food, and one of you says to them, depart in peace, be warmed and filled, but you do not give them the things which are needed for the body, what does it profit? Verse 17, thus also faith by itself, if it does not have works, is what? Dead. Question, how can we have faith without doing good? We talked about it this past Sunday evening about certain vitamins that we need. Okay, we think about vitamin C, which was the Christian service, remember? That's part of it. You know, it's not just enough. That's probably, you know, in their minds, well, you know, depart, go in peace, be warm and be filled. They could have said that all day long. But you know what? That man's still laying there on the side of the road. If we ignore the oppressed, how can God's love be in us? Notice 1 John chapter 3 in that as well. 1 John chapter 3. And verses 16 through 18. By this we know love, because he laid down his life for us, and we also ought to lay down our lives for the brethren. But whoever has this world's goods and sees his brother in need and shuts up his heart from him, how does the love of God abide in him? My little children, let us not love in word or in tongue, but in deed and in truth. Think about that. It kind of goes back to what Jesus said in Matthew 7, verse 21. Not everyone that saith to me, Lord, Lord, shall enter the kingdom of heaven, but he that doeth the will of my Father. Okay? Luke 6, verse 46, why call me Lord, Lord, and do not the things which I say? And the list could go on and on. Jesus many times talked to those scribes and Pharisees because they fell into this category also. What is mine is mine. We are simply told to do good to all men as the opportunity arises. Galatians 6 and verse 10, therefore, as we have opportunity, let's do good to all, especially to those who are the household of faith. That's a verse from this morning. So, I would actually go on to say that the priest and the Levite, the religious people, by their inaction, they have consented to a crime. If you think about it in that way, hopefully we don't fall into that category. We have to be careful on that as well. But then we go back to our parable, and we got to think about the third philosophy of life. You know, the Samaritan comes along, and he's the one that would have been a bad guy, because that's a person who compromised in religious matters. The Samaritan knew how to treat his neighbor, however. The neighbor here was not someone the Samaritan knew, or even someone of the same race, just someone in need. That's all it was. This philosophy is what is mine is thine. It takes us back to what we learn as children and we take with us as we grow up. Well, Many times it starts out when we're kids that we learn this, and when we get on into our older years, that many times our philosophies of life change because of the world. Because my perspective and focus is not the same as I was taught. It changes to what is yours is mine. Well, as a child, we think about that. How many times did we take something from our siblings? I took a lot of stuff because if I could take it, I pretty much had it. And then as the parents, my parents, you know, molded me so gently into what I am today, you know, and I do mean gently. They were focusing on this philosophy here. This is what they wanted me to learn. That what was my brother's was not mine. I was not to take it by force. I was to seek out the good for him. He's supposed to seek out the good for me. See, that's the philosophy they was teaching as I was growing up, as we were growing up. Sometimes that philosophy reverts back to childhood, where we start back to the first one. What is thine is mine. And then the second one, what is mine, where we don't want to share things. We're taught as kids to do what? Share. Do good. This is the philosophy that we need to focus on. And as you might have already guessed of what I'm talking about, saying all of that to get to this, is Matthew 7 and verse 12. This is the stem, right? The golden rule. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. Many times that's a hard thing to, you know, especially as we continue through life and we think about all the things, the wrongs, and so much that goes on. It's hard to have that kind of thinking pattern. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. We might not be getting something in return. They might not be doing good things for us. But you know what? You do good unto them because you know it is right. Because that's what God said. And here you have the Samaritan who took the time to help. He wasn't just so distracted with everything else in his life. He didn't just say, I don't have the time to deal with this. You go see the scribes and the Pharisees. You go see the priest and the Levite. Wait, they've already passed you up. Never mind. They obviously didn't have time for you either. He did not withhold his own goods, okay? Saying, I will need them later. He didn't say that. And you know what that brings to mind? It brings to mind that later on, this very thing unfolds in Acts, in the book of Acts. You ever notice that? That in Acts chapter 2, that you find those individuals who were baptized, who arose to walk in newness of life, the Lord added to the church daily such as were being saved there, in verse 47, that if you back up a few verses, that those souls, those 3,000 that were baptized, what were they doing with their goods? They were sharing them, they were common. They were taking care of each other, weren't they? They weren't withholding anything. Well, what about this? I'm not adequately supplied. I really don't have all the things together. You know, you kind of picked a bad day to have this happen to you. That's some people's mindset. Boy, I tell you what, if it wouldn't have been at this time and on this day, I'd have been more prepared for this. He took whatever he had, his resources at that particular time, and he made it work for this situation. How many times you see this one? Let's wait for someone else to help. Let's kind of be a spectator and let's watch and see what happens. Let's see. I'm going to stand over here and wait for another priest and Levite to come by and see what they do. He didn't. He didn't wait. He wasn't a spectator. He was a participator. He got involved. He did not check out the character of the man to see if he was deserving of help. We know that that's the world in which we live in, that people will use and abuse whatever they can. And, you know, that's one thing about trust that's hard because of the, you know, things. And just like this last instance that happened last Sunday night. There are some that gave freely of their own individual means to help out with gas and food. And, you know, you want to help people. And, of course, I'm one that I never do give money. I don't just give money and say, you know, have a nice day, you know, all that other. Kenzie's got stories of her own with that Silsby, her dad and such, well, the way they do things there. But we went down the road, and we went to Brookshire Brothers and got them food and some drinks. Then went and put gas in their vehicle. And what just shocked me is that there was money inside the vehicle when I was pumping the gas. Where'd that come from? You know, and you see, it gets back to that trust issue. And I always think about it. Of course, now they went on down the road and they hit another place up as they were getting out of services. And what happened? They just threw money at them. You know, yeah, we sometimes, many times, ooh, the character, you know. But many times that's not for us. We have to do our part. And yes, God's going to be on that side there, and he's going to say, you know what, these people are doing wrong. But it's very good that we have the willing hearts, the love, that we want to help someone. The sad part is that many people, once again, use and abuse. It's hard to many times distinguish, right, who's really destitute, I guess is the word that we'd use for that. It's sad. But we did. And we did our part. And we move on. And hopefully that they'll read the bulletins I gave. You know, something. I don't know if one of the articles might have been hitting on that, but I wanted to get some of those articles up, so just in case we might have another instance. But anyways, it's very interesting that Romans chapter 12 hits on this, and verse 20. You ever notice that? He says, if your enemy is hungry, stop. Hit the brakes. Did he just talk about enemies? Okay, now we're talking about lines and battle, now, you know, all this other stuff. If your enemy is hungry, feed him. If he is thirsty, give him a drink. For in so doing, you will heap coals of fire on his head. That's a verse 21. Notice there as it follows along. Do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with what? Good. I like that. I like that. And when we have that type of philosophy, when we have that kind of outlook on life, that I'm there to be an example, and my motive is truly pure, that I do want to help someone. Many times in the recesses of our mind, we're thinking, oh, what am I doing? You know. But you know what? That was the command given. Back in verse 19, though, it says, beloved, do not avenge yourselves, but rather give place to wrath. For it is written, vengeance is mine, I will repay. Many times we have to trust, right? We have to trust in God that He's going to take care of His part, but He wants me to do mine. Do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good. So very simply, what Jesus told them, go and do likewise. That's really a simple command. As he says, just in those few words, go and do likewise, just like I told you there. You know, Jesus brought this up even in earlier chapters of Luke, in Luke chapter 6 as we know it, Luke chapter 6 and verses 32 through 36. So bring the lesson to a close. I want you to think about these words here. But if you love those who love you, what credit is that to you? For even sinners love those who love them. And if you do good to those who do good to you, what credit is that to you? For even sinners do the same. And if you lend to those from whom you hope to receive back, what credit is that to you? For even sinners lend to sinners to receive as much back. But love your enemies, do good, lend, hoping for nothing in return, and your reward will be great. And you will be the sons of the Most High, for He is kind to the unthankful and evil. Therefore be merciful, just as your Father also is merciful. The question is, do we only do good to those who are nice? Who there might be something in return for us? It goes back to that motive. It goes back to what James 2 verse 24 says. You see then that a man is justified by works and not by faith only. We're doing what we are supposed to do. What is mine is thine. A man is justified by his works. Micah chapter 6 and verse 8 says, He has shown you, O man, what is good. And what does the Lord require of you but to do justly, to love mercy, and to walk humbly with your God? I think that's an amazing statement there from the book of Micah. He has shown you. How many verses have we looked tonight where He has shown us what to do? He has told us that this is the way I need to live. That this third philosophy, although that all three of them do exist in our life, that all three of them exist in our world today, in our society, we are to have the third. We are to be the Good Samaritan. When it comes down to physical things, especially the things of spiritual, when it comes down to the gospel, He has shown us what is good. And what does the Lord require of you but to do justly, to love mercy, and to walk humbly with your God? So my friends, we have been shown. The question is, what will we do with what we have been shown? Do unto others as you have them do unto you, from that of the golden rule. 2 Corinthians 12 verse 15, Paul said, And I will very gladly spend and be spent for what? Your souls. Paul also said to those at Philippi in Philippians 2 and verse 13, For it is God who works in you both to will and to do for His good pleasure. That is my responsibility. My responsibility. Are we letting God work through us? Just like the Good Samaritan was working the way that he was supposed to be. That's the design. As you get your psalm books ready, I said a very simple lesson of the three philosophies of life. I hope that we all fall, and sure that we do fall into that third category. That we don't have the robber's mindset, what is thine is mine. The priest and the Levite, what is mine. But simply the Samaritan, what is mine is thine. That of which we have mentioned, what we talked about this morning from Haggai, Haggai 1 and verse 4 tells us, Thus saith the Lord of hosts, consider your ways. Consider your ways. And hopefully our ways are exactly like that of the Samaritan, with the third philosophy that what is mine is thine. Are we doing to others as we'd have them do unto us? Do we have that kind of mindset? My friends, there's something that's amiss in our lives. Hopefully we're allowing God to work through us for His good pleasure, not focused in on me, myself, and I. If our life is broken in some way, won't we come as we stand and sing a song that's misselected?